This is Dave Gloetz. On the phone with me is the Chicago Reader's Ben Jarofsky. Ben, welcome to our first broadcast of 2011.
Happy New Year.
Today we're talking about your article titled Chico and the Man, which appears in the Reader on January 20, 2011. And this is a profile of mayoral candidate Gary Chico. Let's start off with what I view as sort of a main credential of Chico's that you cite in your article, the progress of Chicago Public Schools while Chico was school board president a few years ago. I guess I'd characterize that progress as measurable in both objective and subjective terms. First of all, objective is that during Chico's presidency, some new schools got built and rehabbed. There were preschool and after-school programs expanded. And the subjective measures I would characterize as reading scores as measured by standardized tests improved. And I call that subjective because I've heard from educators that it's pretty easy and common for schools to game the system for standardized tests. So my question to you is, what, if any, of Chico's real or perceived accomplishments in public education indicate he'd make a good mayor?
I'm not certain there are any. I'm being a little facetious when I say that. I tend to be critical of, it wasn't just Jerry Chico. Paul Vallis was in the mix, too. He was the superintendent during that era from 1995 to 2001. I think the single greatest success that Vallis / Chico had during that time with the public schools is through their energy and their power and the money that they had as opposed to their predecessors had. They gave the sense that public education, the public schools could be run, and they could be run efficiently, and they could be made to work for middle-class people. And I think they brought energy and hope to the system, and they improved the public image. I've often been critical about them because I thought their style was autocratic. I thought some of their programs actually hurt more than they benefited, and that in the long run, as you were saying, these improvements, like test score improvements, were rather illusions. They didn't really have much meaning.
What are examples of things that hurt?
I was critical, and I still am, very doubtful about the whole issue of ending social promotion. It sounds good to tell students that if they're not producing at a certain level, they're going to be held back. But in reality, if the system as a system does not know what to do with the students once they hold them back, then essentially I think you're just sending them down a path to failure, to drop out. And I saw evidence of that because in those days I was coaching a lot. I saw that evidence in my little team. I always tell the story. My little team would be playing behemoths from other schools where kids had been held back. It's this anecdotal story, but I just had the sense that a lot of these kids were lost. This system, this massive holding kids back in the name of ending social promotion, it's not really benefiting the children. It may be in a public relations campaign. And so a lot of kids went to summer school, and they would then, you know, as your friends, the teachers tell you, they would be taught to take the tests, and they would quote-unquote pass the tests and then be moved on. And now, lo and behold, here we are later, and it's so ironic. Gary Chico, when he took over as chairman of the city council, said, well, he's not certain they could afford to have remediation classes anymore for 20-year-olds, because there's only so much the city college system can do.
I just want to clarify, you meant city colleges.
Yes, what did I say?
City council.
Oh, no, my bad. Well, a lot of these 20-year-olds were probably in grammar school and high school when these anti-social promotion programs were adopted. So
the chickens come home to roost.
Yeah, that and some of the more autocratic things that Vallis did, I was very critical at the time. But they did give this sense, going back to your question, the sense that the system can be run efficiently. And so here we are in some ways in a similar situation with the city where there's this tremendous budget deficit. Nobody's really sure what it can do to raise revenue without drastically cutting services. I think it's reassuring to a lot of voters when Gary Chico said, well, you know, I approached an impossible task back in 1995. They said it couldn't be done. And look what I did. So that's, I think, the reassuring message that he's trying to send.
Even though it may be somewhat revisionist. This was a pretty long article. Is there anything you left out?
The section on education got edited a bit for length. That's one of my favorite subjects, actually, the whole issue of the public schools in Chicago during the midterm of the Daley era when he sent Vallis and Chico. There's other examples of some of the more autocratic moves he made against school teachers that didn't make the cut, which I think are very telling about the nature of that reign.
You want to tell us one of those?
Well, the most obvious one, and the one that I wrote about a great deal at the time was George Schmidt, who, among other things, he's the publisher of a newspaper called Substance, which is an alternative newspaper that covers the schools and the public schools of Chicago. And to put it mildly, he's been very critical of pretty much all the superintendents over the last 30 years, but especially of Ballas and Chico. And his paper mocked them, criticized them.
What was his job at the time?
He was a high school English teacher at Bowen High School on the South Side. And he's a longtime high school teacher and activist and pain in the neck to the powerful. In 1999, when Ballas and Chico, they came up with their own standardized high school test so that suddenly the high schools were giving three standardized tests a year. You had a national, state, and now the local, as if the students weren't already taking enough tests. And George Schmidt, he not only mocked it and criticized it, but he published portions of it in Substance to show that, it, first of all, it had errors in it, and second of all, it was illogical and poorly written, poorly conceived. In response, Ballas and Chico fired him and sued him for $1 million, claiming that he had violated the public school's trademark by publishing the test. Eventually, after Ballas and Chico left, the board dropped a case against Schmidt. He's never been able to get a job back with the board. I suppose there were retired superintendents who cheered when Ballas and Chico bounced him out of the system. But I actually believe that Schmidt was right in this case, that the test was poorly designed and was a waste of money and it was a waste of time, and that it should never have been adopted. But one thing's for certain, after that first year, they should have just dropped it. But instead, their response to his criticism and his embarrassing them by publishing the test was to fire him, and then they kept the test going for the rest of their regime. And it was Arne Duncan who finally dropped it after teachers at Curie High School threatened not to give it. They didn't want to waste their time giving it.
Let's step back a bit. Last week, you contributed to the Reader's look at mayoral campaign managers. And next week, I hear you're going to be comparing the styles of Rahm Emanuel and Miguel Del Valle. And I'm wondering what you think of the Reader's reporting on the mayoral election, and maybe what else you'd like to see covered that either hasn't yet been covered or isn't going to be covered.
Well, you know, the Reader's never really been a comprehensive guide to elections. Traditionally, we've sort of just chose what we wanted to do. This is particularly the case in the 90s during the so-called glory days of the Reader. What do our writers want to write about? And then in the late 80s, the Reader had writers who loved Harold Washington, even more than I love him. And so we'd read glowing, long articles about how great Harold was and why you should vote for him. So the Reader's been always a little unpredictable when it comes to covering mayoral campaigns. You know, that's what you expect from a alternative newspaper. It's going to do its own thing. In terms of what I would have liked to have seen more of, definitely, is what we had with when Mick Dumke was here. Mick was doing a lot of local aldermanic articles, a lot of them colorful. So I'd like to see more of those, and actually we're talking about doing some of that. But I got to tell you that the Reader political coverage so far has been similar to what it's been down through the years. I think a lot of us seem to forget that. In the 90s, there was no regular political report at the Reader. It was sort of whoever wanted to write the article wrote it.
So it's steady, if nothing else.
Yes, I would say that's a good word.
All right, we'll leave it there. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, David.
This is Dave Glowatz. You've been listening to the rest of the story. When you get a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for further installments of these interviews or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.